good afternoon to you. It's still the morning and it's 11:05 and I don't know where I am. It is the 9 till noon show. It's the last Friday of this week. We welcome in studio Michael Leddy, right? What are you laughing at?
Good afternoon, Greg. Or good evening.
Michael Leddy, writer and blogger. Fionnuala Rabbit.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
How are you getting on?
I'm fine, but I feel exactly the way you feel. Maybe it's the Friday feeling or something.
I was just
giving out about why 2022 Oscars will be in the 2022 movies will be in 2023 Oscars.
Yes, she was, yeah.
But there's clearly things, in a completely different year in my own head.
That's the same with me when they do the budgets, and it's budget 2023 at the end of 2022, and I just can't figure it out.
It's too confusing for me.
I know, it is too confusing for me also.
If you guys watched Doctor Who, you'd be okay with all these dates. Right. I'm just putting that out there.
Okay, well, listen, I'll take that on advice and ignore it.
Exactly.
If you've been watching anything, been out and about, whatever is entertaining you, a book, whatever, film, play, anything at all, 086 60 25,000. Get involved in the conversation, 086 60 25,000, or call us on 074 91 25,000. Hop on to YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, and you can watch us on your smart TV or on your Fire Stick. The same applies to Facebook Watch. Just search out Highland Radio, and we are here live with you every day, every weekday, except it's the coming Monday, from 9 till 12. Gunther's Millions on Netflix, Fionnuala. I've heard this equated to, if that's the right word, to Tiger King, that it's in the same sort of space. Is there anything to that?
Well, it is, in the sense that the story is unbelievable, daft, and you're just kind of sitting there watching it going, what? The Gunther's Millions is kind of go for the dog, stay for the crazy. So I am not a dog person, not really a pet person, but I was like, oh God, the listeners now, a lot of dog people out there. And I was like, this seems an interesting story. Basically, it's advertised as being this countess in Italy. They have a lot of people with different kind of royal titles and that kind of thing over there. And this countess left all of her money to her German shepherd. She had no family. She'd lost her son tragically. And the dog was her son's dog. And she had given all her love and affection to the son's dog after she'd left, after he had died. And so she left all of her money to it, to the dog, with the trustee of the son's friend, who was like a childhood friend of the son's. The amount of money left to the dog was in or around 354 million.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this dog had very expensive tastes. He owned,
like, fast cars and mansions.
Loved them. And loved a boat.
Yes.
Had four or five yachts.
Ah.
And had a mansion in two or three places in Italy. Owned, bought Madonna's old house in Miami and all this kind of stuff. And you're kind of tipping away going, all right, this is just, you know what I mean, lads living off a dog, fair enough. And then it just went crazy.
Goes crazier than that.
It goes crazy after that.
So everything was normal up to this point.
Everything, leaving a dog 354 million euro is the least of the crazy
it's
things.
It's not even a million a day for a year, let's be honest.
The least of the
That's
crazy
That's a lot
things.
Of dog biscuits.
Least of the crazy things. Oh, no,
is it entertaining?
This dog doesn't eat dog biscuits. He has, like, you know, what's that, Kobe beef and that. Uh-huh. And he has a private chef and his meals are served to him on plates. And his wives are selected for him.
Because they
have to keep breeding him in order to keep the money in the trust.
Yes, so, but I was going to, there's a couple of questions here, and maybe they're too sensible, right? Okay. But that's, what did you think the dog was going to do with the money? And secondly, if it has puppies, do they inherit
it? Yes. That's the way that it works. The money can only be inherited by his
offspring.
His line. So currently, it's Gunther 6.
Was this a protest? Did she protest? Is this a protest? In other words, she might as well throw the money away rather than giving it to her son?
No. The thing about this is there's a lot of twists and turns in it. And you can't really fully describe the whole
story. Is there a cat?
But let me just say, giving a dog 354 million is the least of the crazy.
Right.
Somehow, as with all of these things, when a lot of money comes into it, there ends up being a sex cult involved.
Okay. I didn't expect that.
No.
I know. It's left of field. And then there's just like twists and turns and
plenty of leads for you to follow.
Well, like this, there's loads of stuff going on with it. Yeah, and okay. It is all based on a true story. Well, it is a true story. It means based on true story. It's a documentary. The documentary is not done. I'd probably give the actual documentary style.
Is a lot of people like speaking in Italian and then English people speaking over the top of them?
No. There's a
which is rude.
It's about 60-40 English and Italian, and the Italian you have to
read it.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Well, obviously, I suppose you can probably change it.
So you thought you were doing a public service thing here in watching like, this because it was about dogs.
You kind of think, oh, right. Well, he has 27 staff. He's got 6 or 7 houses all over the world. He loves to, you know, fly.
Does he like the company of ladies in bikinis?
He, amazingly enough, he loves the company of ladies in bikinis. He has several of them working for him.
The dirty dog.
And he has as I said, the son's friend and all this kind of thing. And it just has, just the whole story, it's one of these things that kind of went out. The dog then...
Did you dream this, Dougal? No.
The dog has its own media person. It has, like, because there's two things.
It must be rubbish because I've never heard about this.
It's massive in Italy. They show clips from all the TV programs that the dog has been on, all the, you know, morning shows. It's been discussed all over the place. He's the richest dog in the world. And
he's probably one of a few dogs that actually have wealth. So, if the truth
acquired you know, wealth,
there's not
well,
like a load
very few of them. Have
it's not like
themselves.
You know, 99% of dogs can barely put food on the table. You know what I mean? And then you've got this one really rich dog. I mean, it's not like,
and he has 27 staff working for him. So you're kind of like going, dear God.
Does he want to invest in a country in Western Europe, I wonder?
Well, I feel we should definitely try and have a conversation with him.
I mean,
this is what they say. At one point, the lawyer is buying a bigger boat, and he's like, well, the dog, the documentarian, which is something I'm not mad about, actually speaks from behind the camera, which I know you...
Probably without a microphone.
Pet peeve. Oh, yeah. So he speaks and it's sort of like, why are you getting a bigger boat? Is it that you want a bigger boat? And he's like, no, the dog wants a bigger boat.
With a straight face.
He does. And then the documentarian is like, well, like, how did he suggest to you that he wanted a bigger boat?
What's that?
It's just... You're kind of watching it and you're like, this is the
helicopter pad?
If this was one of those kind of, remember those 80s sort of movies where they did crazy pretexts like, you know, Richie Rich or, you know, one of those kind of the kids movies that...
You wouldn't buy it.
No, you wouldn't buy it. And the fact that it actually is a true story, just its twists and turns get more and more bizarre.
Right, are you finished it?
I kind of have a little bit left in it.
Right, what are you, marks out of 10?
Look, the story will keep you in it because it's so crazy. The actual documentary itself wouldn't, I don't know what I'd say. I'd probably only give it like about a 6 or 7 in that sort of sense. But the story is crazy. There's only, I think it's 4 episodes in it. So it's not, and they're only about 40 minutes each. So it's not a crazy amount of time to give it. If you don't mind doing a bit of reading, actually, what's the craziest thing is, I find the Italian very hard to listen to when I'm reading it. Okay. And I was like, and they say Italian is supposed to be like this beautiful language.
Not sure if that's xenophobic, but it's,
kind no, it's coming just, pretty
it's
darn
in the,
close.
It's in the ballpark.
No, but I'm just saying it's
those Italians hard to listen to.
Yeah. In this particular
documentary. It's supposed to be a really romantic language. Like, you're not supposed
to swoon. I know, that's what I mean. I kind of was listening to it and I was like going, yeah, it seems harsher than I thought. I don't really know Italian. I'm just saying I know nothing about it. But just when you're listening to
maybe it was the line of questioning that's why they responded.
Well, I just found it distracting when
trying
to
read. Did you give it marks out of 10?
Yes. Six. I said 6 or 7.
Six and a half, 7. Right.
But the story is definitely worth, if you're not going to watch it, Google it.
Does the dog solve any mysteries, team up with some teenagers? I'm never going to watch it. So.
He's too busy spending his money. He has steak and caviar every day.
9 out of last year's top 10 box office films were sequels or spin-offs. Top Gun Maverick topped the list, taking in over €93 million in cinemas in the UK and Ireland. Avatar, The Way of the Water, was second on the list, with Minions, Rise of the Gru in third. A sequel or spin-off has topped the box office chart every year since 2010. Mm. Now, I mean, that's one way of judging films, isn't it? Their commercial success.
Absolutely.
Does it matter, Michael?
Well, it matters if, again, exactly repeating back what you said, if you're looking for box office, you go with a proven IP, something that people know. That's why TV shows are getting, like Frasier is getting rebooted. People will turn up and watch that definitely on the first night. It's the same sort of thing. So you're getting like, we now know that Will Smith is green lighting Bad Boys 4. Now, obviously, that there's a bit of a career salvation going on there, is he? But that'll work because people will go back and see that. Mm-hmm. So the short answer is yes, it matters in terms of box office, creatively, quality wise.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean they're the best films.
No, it does not, absolutely. I know, but Top Gun was very good. I really enjoyed it.
It wasn't very good.
If you've seen the first one,
I mean, it was entertaining.
The fact that it's up for an Oscar.
But I had never seen the first one. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's shocking that it's up for an Oscar. But the original one wasn't, because it's the exact same film.
Right. I think here, there's two things going on here. Someone say, oh, Hollywood's getting lazy, or wherever the films are made. I think the audience is getting lazy then. What's motivating people to get off the bum-bums and go out and watch a film? Because there's a lot of good stuff out there.
But things haven't changed. Go back to the... Like, The French Connection had a sequel. You know, the sequel series, the road movies of the 30s, 40s and 50s. This is not a new thing. TV was rebooting stuff back. Life of Riley started off in 49 on TV with Jackie Gleason. It was back in 1953 with a different actor. Things were constantly brought back and rebooted.
Well,
Dragnet came back.
A sequel or spin-off has topped the box office charts every year since 2010.
Sounds about right, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean,
it doesn't bother me.
There has been a lot of really good sequels and spin-offs out there. But you would wonder creatively whether it's a good thing down the road. But then I suppose the other side of it is we've had some other stuff. And as you say, things are coming out on different kind of platforms and different stuff like that. So it's harder to judge stuff.
And that's part of, like, even going back, like a film comes out and it's in the cinema, the first one, we say, like Beverly Hills Cop. By the time you get to number two in a series, it's already made its way out. In the old days, it was onto the home market.
That's it, yeah.
And it was on television. Mm. By the time your sequel comes along 3 years later, more people are aware. So then it becomes a bigger hit. Theoretically, it happens. Like people, oh, I'm going to see that. I didn't see the first one in the cinema, but I'll go and see this one.
Mm-hmm. Right. Netflix, You People.
You,
by the way, is coming back. Back in two slots. That's You, which a lot of people liked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's coming back in two tranches, end of February, end of March, I think. But that's not what You People is. This is
a film.
Something different altogether.
And it's the number one film on Netflix.
Number one.
With a bullet. But not really. So number one on Netflix, it's Eddie Murphy's, which is what brought me to this film because I watched Beverly Hills Cop before Christmas. I'm going to watch two and then I'm excited for number four. So this movie...
What about three?
Three I have mixed feelings on, but I may watch it. Yeah, it's not as good as one and two. So You People is... There's an article in The Guardian at the moment which says, defending the movie You People that everyone hates. So the response to this movie has been... really bad. Critics have given, I think it's 43% on Rotten Tomatoes, and the audience score is 39% on Rotten Tomatoes. So what is it? It's Jonah Hill. He is Ezra. I'm reading from the promo here. He's a white Jewish man trying to make it work with a black Muslim woman, played by Lauren London, and their families are the problem. Julia Louis-Dreyfus, who I adore from Seinfeld and Veep and so forth, she's his mother. David Duchovny is his father, and Eddie Murphy is the woman's father.
Well, I think people are bored of this stuff.
Oh, yeah. So this
fish
is
out of water. Well, this is racial tension.
Racial tension
in a different way.
Culture. 1960s.
Different groups of peoples the word you were going to use.
Yeah. 1967's Guess Who's Coming to Dinner was Spencer Tracy and Sidney Poitier, and I think in terms of a rom com that had a racial tension, culture clash background, that set the bar very high. And we come along 55 years later and I think this has failed to even come close to that film.
I mean, Meet the Folkers was so...
Oh, yeah, they're all very... Yeah, and Steve Martin, there was similar sort of ones as well where he was...
Father of the Bride?
Yeah, those kind of movies.
Oh, yeah, and they did Guess Who's Coming to Dinner with Ashton Kutcher.
They did a remake, yeah.
God, why?
Yeah, they did a remake. This isn't funny. And every time there's a scene that makes you cringe, it really makes you cringe. I don't believe... The characters are really stupid, I think, was part of the problem. That's why people haven't responded to it. Yes, you can be culturally blind, maybe, if you're in the room with somebody from a different background, but there's a leap to some of the stupid things that the characters in this do. It's not funny. It's not romantic. The two leads have no chemistry. I went into this thinking I might have a good chuckle and maybe...
Everyone's wrong, they don't get it or something.
Yeah,
or
maybe. Yeah. Well, I hadn't even looked at the reviews, so I just kind of went in blind. I'd seen the trailer, but I really didn't like this. I'd give it like 3 or 4 out of 10. I'm probably being really generous because once or twice, David Duchovny did make me laugh. He has very few lines in it, but anytime he shows up, you're guaranteed to laugh. But that's like 3 minutes of chuckles out of like a... Oh, another thing I hated about it, it's like 2 hours out of my life. Didn't deserve to be 2 hours. There's no story here. So everybody seems to hate this. Critics hate it. People at home seem to hate it. Would be interesting to hear if there was somebody listening who loved it and could say why, but it totally did not
work. Does it try
and
come across with a message? Because obviously there's a backdrop to this here, accidentally or intentionally, because say, for instance, someone like Ye, or formerly Kanye West, who's incredibly, incredibly influential. And ironically, he's releasing some actually good music at the moment, but there's no platform for it because of his very controversial comments about Jewish people.
Jewish people,
But I think it's so real that really, how do you examine this in any artistic way to make it a comedy?
Yeah, I mean...
The perception of the stereotypical Jewish person might be, a Catholic person might be, white person might be, person of colour might be. You know what I mean? We know it all.
Yeah.
What else?
I think it's possible to do it. I mean, the person behind this movie is behind the TV show Blackish, which I've never seen, but I mean, I did 8 seasons and that was critically acclaimed as an Anthony Anderson show. I love Anthony Anderson.
I've seen it.
Yeah. I have never seen it, but I'm aware of the fact that critics seem to think that works and the points that it makes are well made.
Mm.
But I overwhelmingly agree with you. There was nothing new in this. It's a difficult climate to make a movie like this. I applaud their intention.
Really? What was their intention?
Their intention, I think, was to be funny and provoke thought and make you think about the different sides. But it's too broad.
Our world is not like that.
No.
Whereby, it's broad.
Go back to the original Sidney Poitier's Spencer Tracy. Go back to that, which I saw years ago on Channel 4 one night. It works.
In a way, the way the world was then
in the 60s,
was simple. Horrific, but simple.
Mm.
Now there are nuances that... We can't unravel, you can't make a film and challenge people to
and that movie's not really looking like Guess Who's Coming to Dinner is a fabulous movie and there is funny things in it, but they're funny smile things in it. They're not funny
trying to get you to laugh out loud.
It's more that when things are at a height of tension with the discussions that they're having, that
you smirk and say, well played.
It's like wordplay. You know, it's funny in its wordplay. It's not that somebody falls over or runs into a wall or, you know what I mean? That kind of a thing.
And there's none of that in this. There's nothing clever about this movie at all. It needed a clever touch. What this movie needed was someone to come in and punch up the script and put in some kind of clever moments in new people, because it lacks all
even the title. I don't like
because
most times that's actually not used with any malintent, but people are pulled up on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've seen it before where people, what do you mean by you? I didn't mean anything. Maybe it's clever. I just don't think this is the platform to resolve the issues that we have.
I'm not sure if Eddie Murphy's going to solve the problems, as in the type of comedy that he does. I can't imagine it doing that.
He's really subdued in this. Like, he is very subdued. He is almost.
But I don't. You talk about it being the number one film. I don't know. I don't trust that Netflix number one, because I don't know if I mentioned it last week, but I watched Echoes, which was the number one show on Netflix, and it's terrible.
Yeah. Well, it just means people showed up to watch it. Doesn't mean that they...
Oh, how long did they watch it for?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, they showed up to watch it. They may not even finished it.
Like, what's their market share?
The metrics...
Sometimes you wonder,
They work on the, like, millions of minutes engaged. It doesn't mean that people liked it. I mean, people didn't like it, but it means people showed up. Like me, a lot of people were like, Eddie Murphy.
And this is why Cocomelon's consistently in the top 10.
It's a long time since Eddie Murphy's really been in anything.
I think there's buzz around him since Dolomite. Dolomite was a big one, and it was a great film.
But that was a while ago now.
That was 3-4 years. Yeah,
that's what I mean. He doesn't do a lot of stuff. Right. Like, he's done a couple.
And there's buzz around. There is buzz around Beverly Hills Cop 4.
Make him choose it.
You know.
But, all right.
Could it be money? Could it be?
Could it be?
But what is it that saying? If you can't.
We can't all live off the dogs.
So
And you can't take the knickers off a bear ass either, if you're going to use the word.
But that's what they say. I think sometimes with these movies, they need to pick a lane. You can't have everything. You can't do everything in it. You are either going to go with funny or you're going to go with...
As a romance as well, the two leads are a bizarre... I mean, it's even the lead actress has addressed it in an interview. I was scanning it this morning. But yeah, people are saying to her, like, and she says she doesn't even believe in the chemistry between the two of them. I mean... No, it just doesn't work.
Greg, just listening to you on the Eurovision, as you know, I'm a Eurovision fan. Ireland has the best finalists in 20 years. Love both the Donegal songs. Wanna will be a winner tonight. My prediction, Leila Jane, nips it as being complete modern Eurovision song that attracts all ages across the EBU. And with those two songs, Ireland has the best chance of winning the contest. Come on, Donegal. I think they're both great. I think either. I wouldn't be disappointed if either won. I just don't trust the process, and I'm really sorry to say that I don't. I'm not saying there's anything going on. I just don't trust that we'll send out what will be the best song. Watched Bali 2002 on the RTE player. Pretty good Australian drama telling the story of huge terrorist attack back in 2002. Only issue was the number of adverts on the RTE player, but you know, it is what it is.
It's
even
killer.
Channel, even more fours. More on demand anyway. Hi Greg and TV duo, I saw Extraordinary over the weekend. Very funny at the start but tails off near the end. Siobhan McSweeney finding Bridget is only in it for 30 minutes pottering around in three episodes. Wolfpack lacks spite but may chew it on from time to time. Kevin, thank you very much.
Yeah, very good. Wolfpack, that's kind of...
He's exhausted his puns for the week. I cannot recommend Pamela Anderson's documentary on Netflix enough. Her life is such a tragic story. Mm-hmm. Like most women, she was only ever looking to love and be loved. I cried for her during it. She deserved so much better. That is, and it even come across in the dramatisation, I think, Fionnuala, that she was just a person that everyone was taking from.
Yeah, that's... Well, I haven't managed to watch much of it now because it only landed, I think, yesterday, Wednesday or Thursday. It's only in the last few days, anyways, that it's landed on Netflix. But this is her answer to the TV programme because the Disney programme had brought up so much stuff and kind of had done a lot of things.
It was sympathetic to her, so I remember
I didn't think it was negative about her per se in it, but I suppose to her mind, it was... She wasn't... She didn't get paid. She wasn't involved in it. Yeah. She wasn't involved in the production. She wasn't involved in any of that. And I suppose if you're taking somebody's story and they're not necessarily involved in it, it's easy to see why they can take a negative stance to it.
100,
this is supposed to be her answer to that. It's just kind of like a talk back to the way her life unfolded, the impact that it had, not just on herself, but on culturally. And it's like we were talking about the Chippendales. It's amazing some of the stuff that happened in the 80s that you think of in one way that actually had cultural ripples. And like Pamela Anderson was nearly the start of internet porn, which is just unbelievable.
Well, yeah, her certainly, yeah. Yeah, 100%.
It tested
the market, and the market was there.
And the market was there for it. So it's like, it's amazing the different things, you know, the cultural impacts that it had. She talks about that. She talks about all different kind of stuff in it. It's based with used with her own home videos, talking to her friends,
not all of them,
to herself. No.
Great.
Seeing her home videos, talking to her, all her husbands, talking to her. Herself and her friends and different things like that. So I know everything I watch seems to be ungranny.
Poor granny's in the cupboard. Just the cupboard granny.
Okay, we'll probably have a good look at that during the week and come back and report on it.
I wouldn't mind watching that myself. Actually, it's only a documentary, so that if it had been like a 7-part series, I wouldn't. But I'd watch a documentary.
All right, back with more shortly.
The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
Okay, very welcome back to the programme. Halfway through a conversation there. Let's say good morning and welcome back onto the programme, Paddy Colovan. Good morning, Paddy. Can you hear me okay?
Good morning, Greg. How are you? Yes, I'm all right. I'm here in Galway.
Very good. It's good to have you with us. Right, the murder of Michael Collins is in the Balor Arts Theatre tomorrow night, the 4th of February at 8 p.m. Right, we've spoken about this story before, but give us a recap of it, Paddy.
Well, basically last year was the 100th anniversary of Michael Collins' death. And I suppose when we're thinking about things like, it's funny, I was at something recently where a historian said we're at the end of the decade of centenaries. From what I can remember, the Civil War ended in May of 1923, so we still have 5 months or 4 months to go. And as a result of Michael Collins dying at that time, the whole policy of the Free State changed. There was executions like the Drumbo Martyrs in Ballybofey itself. All of these things came out of the death of Michael Collins, and yet it's one of the most mysterious events in Irish history. There was no inquest, there was no inquiry. The autopsy went up in flames in 1932. Michael Collins doesn't even have a death cert. And I thought that this show would only have a life within 2022 itself, but it seems that the interest in it, it's a story for the ages, a bit like the Tom Green show. And so I sold it out in Limerick on Wednesday night. I'm doing it tonight in Roscommon and tomorrow night in Ballybofey, and I'm hoping everybody can make it down. It's a fascinating story. Think of a live murder mystery documentary with 300 images. There's even a few songs and actually a few laughs, would you believe, because the whole story is so farcical, Greg. Newspapers were as much fake news back then as they are now, with all respect to great Donegal newspapers and great Donegal broadcasters like yourself.
No, I get it. But this is the type of show that people have to see, really, to understand how to explain it, really. But audiences absolutely love it and rave about it. But there is something very important going on here, and very important questions being asked, because, you know, people be fascinated with what happened to JFK. Hey, well, you know, look inward before you look out, because here's a story that has more twists and turns and contradictions and complications and unanswered questions than any story internationally that you could imagine.
Well, it's funny that you say JFK. I compare it very much to that. And yet in JFK, we had 200 witnesses, many of whom ended up dead. We have the Zapruder film. We have basically photography and footage. We have nothing of Bail na Blá. There isn't even any forensic or ballistic evidence from there. Not a single bullet from the site. We have the bullet that killed Harry Boland in a hotel in Skerries. That's actually an exhibit. But we don't have a single bullet from Bail na Blá. It's like the ambush never happened. And this is what makes it such a creepy and strange story. And it's really worth delving into it. Because it's not just the death of Collins himself. He had 25 men protecting him in a heavily armed escort. They were attacked by 5 men with a couple of handguns and rifles. And yet the only casualty in the whole thing is the most important man in Irish history. The only man who took the British to the negotiating table and negotiated a peace. It's unbelievable what went on. And if you think, if this happened in Turkey to Ataturk in the 1920s or to Tito in Yugoslavia, there'd be no stone left unturned. And it's quite interesting you say that, Greg, because David McWilliams came to the show when it was in Dublin in August, and he turned around to me afterwards and says, "Paddy, this isn't about Michael Collins at all, is it?" I said, "Well, what do you mean?" He goes, "This is about how the Irish approach their history, how we mythologize almost straight away what went on. And we actually lie to ourselves about what went on." So it's a great moment of revelation, and people who have come away from it saying, "My mind is blown."
And we've spent generations doing that on the tiniest levels within our own homes, you know, brushing things under the carpet or settling on some acceptable way of reflecting on it as we move forward. There is lots and lots of questions. Do you give us answers, your answers, or do you propose a series of possibilities and allow the audience to decide?
Well, I suppose what I do is I say, based on the evidence we have, which is none, I'd like you to draw some conclusions. I do offer an alternative based on the evidence we have, which is none, or alternative evidence which does exist. And what I want to do is, I think the audience, I think, you know, we talk down to Irish people so much in this country, particularly from the state side of things. And we kind of treat people like they're fools. And I think that our audience is absolutely brilliant. And Irish people are very sophisticated. And they can make up their own minds about what went on. I trust the Irish people to know really what went on when I give the information. The fact that one of the people in Michael Collins' escort was a member of British intelligence before and after the assassination. That the person who's been accused of it for 50, 60 years has been called a marksman and a sniper in every national newspaper, and yet I went into it and found no evidence that he ever was a marksman or a sniper.
But the problem is though, there is a piece of text or a theory, and that be established as the starting point, and it's referenced and constantly it dates. It's almost like Chinese whispers, but it all goes back to one original narrative that people, either through laziness or ignorance, believe to be the absolute truth.
Well, I call it the Italian 90sification of Irish history, Greg.
That's why you're clever and I'm thick.
No, not at all.
I like the way you put it. Well, I just want Chinese whispers.
Well, Chinese whispers is a great phrase, actually, because that's how it happens. But no insult to the genius Paddy Bonner, who saved our lives, and Dave O'Leary in Italian 90. But if I was to tell you Italian 90 as it actually happened, it was 3 relatively bad draws against inferior teams. We got a penalty shootout by the seat of our pants, and then we were kicked out of the tournament by Italy. Now, that's a horrible way to describe Italia 90, one of the most exciting and brilliant moments in our lives. Instead, we like to describe it as the greatest moment in Irish history since the Book of Kells. And as far as I'm concerned, and you're concerned, Greg, we won the World Cup in 1990.
Oh, yeah.
Not Germany. And that's, but this is what I mean. And it's okay when we apply it to sport. And it's okay when we apply it to our own achievements or to our families or to great moments in our lives. But we can't do that with history. If we do that with history, you end up getting about 200 fellas saying they were at Béal na Bláth. They all took part, the Kerry IRA, the Waterford IRA. In fact, one thing I've taken out of the show is that the only people who knew what happened at Béal na Bláth exactly are the ones who weren't there. And the only people who saw nothing are the ones who were.
Right, okay. Listen, it is a remarkable story told in a remarkable way. It is a show that has sold out and is selling out everywhere it goes. There are a number of tickets available for the show in the Bala Arts Centre on Saturday night. That's February the 4th, of course. It starts at 8 p.m. and it's the type of show that it's very hard to articulate how it's presented and all of that. You have to go and see it and you will not be disappointed. Because, I mean, this is a remarkable way of relating information and what have you, Paddy. Always a pleasure to chat to you. Hope next time we have a little more time. But thank you very much and good luck with the show tomorrow night. Okie doke, we're back in room. And I'm saying that for Michael and Fanula's benefit. Full of chat. Full of chat. As if all the time on air is not enough. They need the ads as well. Right, so I think we did Gunther's Millions and we've done You People. I'm fascinated at the idea of Shotgun Wedding.
I nearly watched that too.
To be honest, this is the thing. Again, I mentioned one last week, which is, the people we hate at the wedding. This is in a similar type of thing, although I don't know how they all end up being about weddings. But it's...
fairness now... If it was Michael was watching films on a certain subject in consecutive weeks, he would be getting an awful roasting here, Fanula.
Well,
now, you are watching a lot of films.
You think I'm pining for a wedding?
About
wedding.
Are you nesting? Are you nesting at home?
It's a bit late in the day.
It's never too late.
Oh, God, I don't know. But no, I don't think so, unless I'm subconsciously. That's what's going on. I don't know.
Well,
But these are my only wedding things that I've watched. To be honest, I went to this because it's Jennifer Lopez's new movie and it's on Amazon. And there was a lot of talk about it. And Jennifer Lopez is one of those people that you can always watch her movies, but sometimes they're a little bit... They just don't hit the mark. You know what I mean? Now, they're never going to be ones that... She's never going to win awards for them. They're always going to be movies that you can just kind of sit around...
She's always been a pop singer that does the odd film, but it's not great, but she brings her name to it and maybe...
Well, no, but she's done a couple of them that were good.
Out of Sight is one seems to spring to mind. No?
Yes.
Yeah.
Out of Sight was one that she did that was good. She also did
That had source material in common with Justified.
Oh, so it's not Jennifer Lopez's fault that it was good. Yeah. Right, moving on.
She's been in other stuff that was good. She's had, and there's been a few things that were very good. She was one where she was, I can't even think of the name.
So there's good things, but you can't think of any.
I know, I can't think of the name of the movie. She was one where she was like the manager and a thing, went back to college, ended up running the place. She's done lots of different kind of thinging wedding ones as well. This is not the first one that she's been done the relationship ones. She's done lots of different ones.
Your best review ever.
But she's also she's done loads of movies.
Loads of movies.
Some of them are great. Some of them are great. And then some of them like Made in Manhattan and that kind of thing. There's no chemistry there.
M-A-D-E.
Yeah. There's no M-A-I-D.
Yeah,
there's no chemistry there, and you know things don't necessarily work out. But she's like, I mean, the same as a lot of kind of considering. Well, I mean, she's an A-lister name with kind of a B-lister movies, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
But they're fine. But that's why I'm saying. That's why I put this in line with the other thing. This is a solid movie for what it is. She never does anything that's, you know, really tapping into a strength of drama in her performances or whatever. This has got explosions, it's got, you know, fun running around.
Jennifer Coolidge.
Lads getting killed, jumping off stuff, all that kind of stuff. Jennifer Coolidge is
It's Die Hard at a wedding, basically.
Men jumping off things, dying, explosions.
That's it.
But that's what we want.
At a wedding.
Yeah. You're sitting down, you know what I mean? You're sitting down and you just want something that you can check out.
Yes.
And, you know, just sit there, have a glass of wine, talk if you want to through it, whatever, it's fine. But it's actually, I don't know anybody that's watched it that came away thinking, dear God. Whereas I'm also at the same time trying to get through... myself and my friends all kind of watch the Oscar movies when they come up.
Yeah.
And it's a struggle. It's a struggle.
Because, like, you know, like you point to an
Don't all want to be highbrow.
No,
you know,
exactly.
There's no need.
Exactly. But it's you approach different films with different expectations, don't you? And I think if you're sitting down Friday night, a glass of whatever, Shotgun Wedding with Jennifer Lopez and Josh Duhamel, you aren't expecting not to be able to sleep as you try and unravel the subplots of this masterpiece, you're going to go to bed entertained.
That's it. You're going to come away from it you're going to sit down, get yourself a nice bar of chocolate.
Ooh,
a nice glass of something.
Talking my language.
That's it. Nice glass
fruit
of something. Just relax. Put your feet up. That's it. Put your feet up and watch this movie, and you won't come away from it unhappy. It is exactly what it says on the tin. Good. And it actually hits the mark. A lot of the times these movies, you kind of sit down thinking and then you're like, oh, that was ridiculous or whatever.
Is it action, comedy?
It is
romance.
It would consider itself all three, which is always a difficult thing to do. Basically, the story is that Jennifer Lopez and Josh Duhamel are getting married. They're he's a sports star, so they have a few pounds behind them. She comes from a very wealthy family, and they decide to have this massive, big destination wedding. He's all about it, organizing it, the whole thing, and she's hasn't shown much interest in it all along. And then all of a sudden, some Somalian, I shouldn't say that, I don't know where they're from, some pirates show up, and it all sort of kicks off from there. And that's, so they end up all kind of being held hostage. And
did it ever get a cinema release? So
No, it's an Amazon movie. Okay. It was made for Amazon, so it's not that it's good. That's the thing now, you know, we kind of have that sort of an attitude that the things went to cinema or they went another way, but now you've all these movies with big names in it that
and
are never...
And it doesn't mean they're low budget either.
No,
it do,
no.
TV
oh God,
films,
there's a lot of money spent in this now. There's a lot of explosions in it. There's, you know what I mean? There's helicopters falling out of the sky, all kinds of crack in it. So there's definitely... And it's beautiful.
Men
the
dying
setting.
As well, by the way.
Just leaping off things.
The setting is beautiful. They do leap off things all
the
time.
Yeah, well, and you know, that's what you want in a film.
Do you remember used to show on ITV in a Saturday morning? It was like behind the scenes where they showed you how certain parts of films were made.
The stunts and stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah, I used to love that. Brilliant. You don't do that really anymore. It's a great show. It was a great show. It had Terminator stunts were done, or you know, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Or TJ Hooker or whatever.
Oh, you're talking my language.
So, Shotgun Wedding with Jennifer Lopez, Josh Duhamel, it hits a lot of boxes, ticks them.
It does exactly what it
what
says.
What are you giving it out of 10, though?
Well, in its genre, as in, if you want to call them
asterisks incoming.
I mean, I'm elevating it there slightly by giving it a genre. But you know what I mean? In that kind of, like, as you say, what is it? A romantic comedy, action romance, that kind of thing.
Sounds like Red or some of those films.
Yeah.
Is it that kind
seems
of?
Like it,
yeah. If you're going to tell me now, I'd say it's more Red 2 than it is Red. Yeah, I really liked Red. And I would give Red very high marks, but then when Red 2 was a little bit...
It was watchable, but it wasn't up to Red,
It wasn't up to the original one, and that's what I would give it. I would give this a Red 2. You give it a solid 7 or 8. You'll sit there, you won't be disappointed, you'll walk away from it, and you won't be halfway through going, I'm sorry, why? Why am I watching this?
All right, so...
Which is a reaction from some people with their Oscar movies trying to catch up with them going...
All right, back shortly. All roads lead to the Silver Tassie tomorrow evening because Trucking for Chrysler will take place tomorrow. Colin Kilpatrick is the organiser. Colin, good morning to you. Final preparations being put in place, I'm sure.
Morning, Greg. Yeah, we're getting there now.
Right, okay. So what's the call out today? You're still looking for people to get involved in the big auction that's taking place? You're still looking for lorries and flatbeds and vans and what have you to join the procession?
Well, the auction, Greg's online now, up on Facebook. All the lots are on. It's starting at 8 o'clock sharp. The auction will be, there will be a bit of music before it, but just the lots are on Facebook now for anybody that wants to see, and there's nearly 120 lots, so a lot of stuff, and there's brilliant, everything's brilliant that we have. So
brilliant. So people can go on Facebook now, find out what they might want to bid on. Now, is it the Trucking for Chrysler Facebook page?
Yeah, it's an event, Trucking for Chrysler, so you'll get it on there. It's on there now, yeah.
Rightio. Now, obviously, there's going to be some amazing vehicles out and about yesterday. The guards, and we'll be carrying that information, are advising motorists of the route and to expect some delays, but they're going to keep things moving just as well as they can. So Most, I think, a meeting at the Ard in Ballybuffet. At what time tomorrow, Colin? And then heading where? And we also know that on the way, others will join the convoy.
Yeah, so meeting at Bernard Long's yard, Ballybuffet, there's a, most of the lawyers are going there, so get up early. It's leaving 1 o'clock sharp. The Garda Síochána is leading it. We have to pull it at 1 o'clock, whatever happens, whoever's there or not. So I just want everybody to be up so they don't miss it, to get registered. There are a lot of the auction stuff on display. There's tea and coffee on there. The drivers have to be briefed, just so we can let the drivers know if there's any, you know, what has to be done on the run, if there's an emergency, or, you know, or the guards or ambulances or anything has any problems, just so the drivers can be briefed. And the same for the Applegreen and Letterkenny. If the Applegreen falls out, which it probably will, because we're getting such a big response, there's an overspill car park at the back of the Clanree Hotel. They have kindly given us the back of the hotel, the big massive car park.
Brilliant. I mean, that's perfect. Right, so and people can get out and watch as these vehicles go past as well. They're leaving Ballybuffet at 1 o'clock, making the way through Letterkenny, out to Creasla, turning at Creasla, and then heading back towards the Silver Tassie. And then things get underway from about 7 p.m. at the Tassie, is that right?
That's right, yeah, 7 p.m. So Thurman, Mulford, the Melton people, we're going through your towns. Get out and see us. And we'll be then up to Silver Tassie. So everything's kicking off at 7. And the auction's at 8. So be there sharp. There's a lot of brilliant stuff. So
lorry parts, new tyres, sheep, tools. There's a wide variety of stuff to be auctioned on the night.
There's a wide variety.
And things are going to have to move quickly at the auction, I think. People are going to have to bid quickly because there's a lot of stuff to get through. After that, you've got the David Craig Band and DJ Tubbsy providing entertainment alongside some special guests. Tickets are €15. We say doors open at 7 p.m. Go along and support it. Colin, who himself was involved in the aftermath and the recovery in the Creasla tragedy, very moved by this, as we know from speaking to Colin in the past. And he and all of his crew are doing this to support the fund. Right, Colin, lastly, you've had an amazing response to this. I think it's probably grown into something bigger than even you could have imagined. It's amazing, really, what's happening, isn't it?
Well, I mean, target set between 60 and 80 lorries, and if it was going to go very well, maybe 100. We're probably going to have 300 lorries. We have 120 lots. We couldn't ask for anything more, and I just want to thank everybody from the bottom of my heart that has donated. Even all the lorry men, yourself as well, for the interview, Greg. You know, you made it so easy, and for the difficult that it was.
And thank you,
just
Colin.
To talk about that, and thanks very much. You know, no, thank and the yard as well.
And I know there's a lot of people out there who want to thank you as well. So we'll hopefully we'll see you tomorrow night. See everyone there. Take care, Colin. Well done to you, and I mean
thanks.
That.
Thanks very much.
All right, take care. All right, bye-bye. Okay, that's going to be a big one. It's going to be huge. Right, okay. I saw a lot of backlash on... Well, I'm not going to get into that one because it's a bit controversial and we just don't have the time to do it justice. And it's not the type of issue that really you'll just want to brush across on. There's another one too controversial to get into at the moment. So what should we talk about? Romantic Getaway on Sky.
Romantic Getaway on Sky. That's nothing controversial about that. Although I could drop you in it by saying what a controversial show this has proved to be. It's a half-hour comedy drama. I like Sky shows. Code 404 is one of my all-time favourite comedies of recent years. I love Intelligence as well. I think it's a great comedy. So I went into this with high expectations. Ramesh Ranganathan, stand-up comedian, is the brains behind this, co-creator and star.
He's all over everything, isn't he?
He's huge, yeah. He's on a lot. You see his specials. He's been on Jonathan Ross a lot and various things. So it's a comedy drama, and I know, Greg, you love comedy dramas.
Or drama comedies.
Or drama comedies. So basically you have a couple. Catherine Ryan is the co-star in this, also a stand-up comedian.
She's very good as well.
Yeah, they're very funny people.
In The Masked Singer, I think.
I didn't know that. Yeah. I didn't know that. So they're a married couple who are desperately trying to have a child, and she's going through all those fertilization treatments, which are very expensive and very painful. And their boss, Johnny Vegas, again.
Good cast.
Yeah, it's a fantastic cast. Don't get your hopes up, though. Right. Keep it up. He is a bit of a dodgy kind of boss, and he won't pay them their bonuses, and he owes them money, and they're not. So basically, they decide that they're going to steal from him, 50 grand, via some of his dodgy dealings, Bitcoin or some kind of cryptocurrency type thing. And at the last minute, staring at this million plus secret bank account, our hero adds a zero and ends up taking half a million.
And that's so, where we're going to have to...
Oh, okay, right.
Unfortunately. You're not giving it... Are you enjoying it?
No. Okay. I finished it.
Right. Marks out of 10?
6.
Really? Okay, that's okay. If you don't enjoy something, you're going to have to start going under 5.
Yeah, it's okay. Seriously. It's okay. It walks a line.
Why?
It's brutal. What would you give it? 6 or 7?
No. I haven't watched anything this
Well, I gave you people 4. 4? 4 is good. 4 is about, yeah, like, and this is way better than 4.
I am joking, whatever
4,
you just want. Yeah. Fanula, thank you so much for your really entertaining contributions, as always. Same to you, Michael. God
See
bless you,
later.
You. Enjoy your weekends. Okay, that's where we have to leave it on the programme. Thanks for listening to the show and getting involved. We're back with you on Tuesday, because, of course, we have a new bank holiday Monday now.